The first call came after 9. I remember because I was already in bed, phone face down on the nightstand, convincing myself that I had done enough for the day. I'd answered emails through dinner, stayed late to finish what he said was urgent, told myself that being reliable was how you survived where I worked. When the phone lit up again, I didn't think danger. I thought responsibility. He didn't start with anything obvious. He never did. It was always framed as a problem only I could solve, a loose end he trusted me with, a situation he didn't feel comfortable sharing with anyone else. I told myself that trust was currency, that access meant security, that saying yes meant staying employed. What I didn't understand yet was how quickly night turns into territory, how the tone shifts when the office is asleep, how expectation grows teeth when it's fed consistently. By the time I realized the calls weren't about work anymore, my phone had already learned my silence. And so had he. I worked in a place that sold itself as lean and modern, the kind of environment where flexibility was praised and boundaries were treated like inefficiencies. We didn't have rigid hours. We had availability. We didn't have a chain of command you could point to. We had influence. Titles existed, but proximity mattered more. He was above me in every way that counted, not just in title, but in access, in how his name landed when it was said out loud. People adjusted when he walked into a room. Conversations bent, decisions accelerated. When he asked for something, it didn't sound like a request. It sounded like momentum. At first, I liked that he noticed me, not in a flattering way, but in a practical one. He remembered what I handled well. He sent work directly to me instead of letting it drift through layers. When things broke late in the day, he asked if I could stay, and I did. I told myself it was smart to be visible, that being indispensable was safer than being invisible. The calls started during busy stretches, deadlines that didn't respect office hours, issues that couldn't wait until morning. He'd say my name like it was a solution. He'd ask if I had a minute, then keep me for 40. He'd apologize for the timing, then do it again the next night. There was nothing I could point to at first, no line crossed, no comment I could quote back to myself and say, this is wrong. It was all tone and frequency and the quiet assumption that I would answer. When I did, he sounded relieved. When I didn't, he followed up with a message that carried just enough disappointment to feel like a warning. During the day, he treated me like a trusted extension of himself. He'd reference things we'd talked about the night before, not the content, just the fact of our connection. It made me nervous and proud at the same time. I was inside something. I just didn't know what it would cost. I noticed changes in how others looked at me before I noticed changes in myself. Colleagues started pausing when I walked into rooms. Someone joked about me being his favorite. I laughed it off because laughing felt safer than asking questions I didn't want the answers to. At home, I kept my phone close even when I didn't need to. I told myself it was professionalism, that leaders needed to be reachable, that this was what commitment looked like in a place that moved fast. I ignored the way my body tensed when the screen lit up. I ignored the fact that I no longer slept through the night. The calls shifted gradually. He started asking how I was before asking about work. He commented on how tired I sounded. He told me I worked too hard, then asked me to do one more thing. He said he trusted me because I understood him. That word lodged somewhere uncomfortable. Understanding is intimate even when it pretends not to be. I started anticipating the calls, not wanting them, exactly, but bracing for them, planning my evenings around the possibility, keeping my laptop charged, staying half alert. Availability had become expectation, and expectation had started to feel like obligation. There was a moment early on when I could have pushed back. I see it clearly now. A night when I let the call go to voicemail and nothing happened. No fallout, no punishment, just silence. But the next day he mentioned it casually, said he'd hoped I'd been free, that it had been important. The disappointment in his voice did the work consequences hadn't. I apologized. He accepted it. The pattern locked in. Once something becomes normal, it doesn't announce when it mutates. The calls grew longer. The topics drifted. Work bled into commentary about people, about politics in the office, about how exhausting it was to be in charge. He confided in me. At least that's how it felt. He spoke as if I were the only one who saw the weight he carried. That kind of closeness changes how requests land. When he asked me to stay late again, it wasn't just a task. It was loyalty. When he called at night, it wasn't just urgency. It was reliance. Saying no felt like abandonment. He began to frame things in terms of what he needed from me personally, not my role, me. He said I was steady, that I didn't overreact, that I made things easier. Those words sound harmless until you realize they're instructions. Be calm. Be available. Don't complicate this. The first time he crossed into something unmistakably personal, it wasn't dramatic. It was a comment that lingered too long. A question about my life that didn't connect to work. He laughed it off himself, said he was rambling, said it was late. I laughed too because acknowledging it would have required a response I didn't feel safe giving. After that, the boundary was gone, even if neither of us named it. He referenced that conversation again, tested how far he could lean. The calls started later, sometimes after 10, sometimes after midnight. If I didn't answer, he'd text. If I didn't respond, he'd follow up in the morning with a smile and an apology that felt rehearsed. During the day, nothing changed on the surface. He was still professional, still respectful, still powerful. That duality made it worse. There was no single version of him to push against, just a private one and a public one, and I was the only person who saw both. I told myself I was complicit because I kept answering, that I could stop anytime. But the truth was more complicated. My workload increased in ways that tied directly to him, projects that bypassed normal approval channels, responsibilities that weren't documented, praise that wasn't public. Everything about my position had become informal and therefore fragile. The night he made it clear that refusal wasn't an option, he didn't raise his voice. He didn't threaten me outright. He simply outlined what would happen if I wasn't there when he needed me. How others would step in. How perceptions shift. How quickly people forget who used to be reliable. He said it gently, like advice, like concern. I felt something collapse inside me then, something naive and stubborn that had been insisting this was still within my control. After that, I stopped pretending the calls were optional. I answered even when I didn't want to. I stayed present even when I felt myself pulling away internally. I learned how to keep my voice neutral, how to redirect conversations back toward work without provoking irritation, how to manage his moods like deliverables. There were nights when I stared at my phone long after the call ended, trying to understand how something that never touched me physically could still feel invasive. How exhaustion could feel like a form of consent. How power doesn't need force when it has access. I thought about reporting it, briefly, but there was nothing clean to report. No messages I could forward without implicating myself. No witnesses, just a pattern of expectation and the knowledge that my word would be weighed against his reputation. I knew how that math worked. So I stayed. I adapted. I told myself survival wasn't the same as agreement. I told myself this phase would end, that eventually he'd move on, or I'd become less necessary. I didn't realize yet that the system had already absorbed our arrangement, that my role now included silence. The calls didn't stop suddenly. They thinned out, became less urgent, less frequent. When they did come, they were shorter, colder. I sensed the shift before it was visible. He had found other ways to get what he needed, other people to lean on. I should have felt relief. Instead, I felt exposed. During the day, he stopped looping me in. Projects I'd built quietly moved to other hands. Decisions were made without me. When I asked questions, he answered politely but vaguely. The access I'd mistaken for security evaporated. No one accused me of anything. No one confronted me. That was the cruel elegance of it. There was no moment of reckoning, no fallout that could be traced back to the nights I'd given up. Just a gradual narrowing of my influence until I was back where I'd started. Except more tired and less sure of myself. I left that job eventually. Not dramatically. I found another position, told myself it was time for a change. On my last day, he shook my hand and thanked me for my dedication. His eyes didn't linger. Whatever we'd been to each other at night had no currency in daylight anymore. It took longer for the residue to fade. For a long time, my phone made me tense after dark. I struggled with the instinct to be available, to preempt needs before they were voiced. I had to relearn what a boundary felt like instead of what it cost. What stays with me most isn't anger, it's clarity. I understand now how easily professionalism can be weaponized, how systems reward those who blur lines while punishing those who name them, how silence isn't just personal weakness, but often a rational response to an environment designed to protect itself. I don't tell this story because it's exceptional. I tell it because it's ordinary in ways we don't like to admit, because nothing explosive happened, and yet something was taken. Time, sleep, the quiet belief that saying no would be respected. Work didn't stop being work all at once. It shifted, call by call, night by night, until the expectation felt inevitable. And even now, when my phone lights up late, there's a part of me that still listens for his voice, reminding me how quickly need can turn into leverage when power decides it's lonely.